National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
It has now been a week since the devastating floods in the hill country of Texas that claimed the lives of more than 100, including dozens, tragically, of young girls. More than 170 are still missing as rescue and recovery efforts continue. The question being asked, of course, is how did it happen? But also, what has the church's response been to this tragedy? This week on Register Radio, we're joined by CNA senior editor Amira Abuzaid and Register contributor Jim Graves. And then, there's quite a bit of news coming out of France. We talked to Register Europe correspondent Solène Tadier. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' vice president and editorial director. I'm joined, as always, in studio here in Washington, D.C., by Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. Shannon, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
First, a quick thank you for taking over last week while I was away.
Yes, it felt a little odd without you here, but we managed.
It was a great show, too. So I encourage everyone to take a listen to last week's episode. Well, the community in the hill country of Texas, especially surrounding Kerrville, Texas, continues to grieve after the catastrophic flooding of the Guadalupe River as rescue teams continue on with their task of recovering the remains of missing victims. Jim Graves and Amira Abuzaid have covered this story for the National Catholic Register and for the Catholic News Agency, and they join us now. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Amira, let's start with you. I know that you have been really in the forefront of this story. Could you, given your location where you are, I know in Texas, provide some context, some geography for our listeners as to where all of these events happened, but just how far the scale of loss has been?
Sure. So I grew up in Boerne, Texas, which is in the Texas Hill Country off of I-10. It's 20 miles northwest of San Antonio. So I grew up with flash floods as part of our world. You know, we knew whenever it rained a lot, there could be flash floods. And back then, you know, there were no iPhones, so you just kind of had to keep an eye out, basically. But I was in Boerne visiting my parents last weekend when the flooding occurred, and I immediately called a few friends who I knew lived near rivers. And one of them, unfortunately, her house did flood, but she and her three children are safe, and they are rebuilding now. So let's see, Kerrville is another 40 miles northwest of Boerne, where I was. And I had several friends who had just picked up, I had one friend in particular who just picked up her daughter from Camp Mystic the week before. And so I called her and, you know, made sure she was okay. And, you know, she has been giving me updates, you know, since that time.
Amira, you're based in Houston, correct?
That's right.
And you had covered the memorial service that was held there some days afterwards. We'll talk about that in a moment, but it seemed as if a lot of the families who send their children to this camp, Camp Mystic, are from the Houston area. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And could you tell us a little bit about this camp? I mean, it's 99 years old, so a century-year-old camp. It sounds idyllic in many ways. And it seems to have a big cultural influence on that part of Texas. Horseback riding, I mean, you name it, all the fun stuff that you associate with camp. It's a Christian camp, but there is a Catholic presence there. I noticed that they have weekly Catholic masses, so it is an ecumenical camp. But tell me a little bit about its importance to the area.
Sure. So, yeah, the camp is almost 100 years old. And as I understand it, the same family has owned it since the 1930s. And because of that, the camp has a very strong family. They're just very strong traditions. And the campers feel that it feels like a family. Everybody that I've talked to who has ever attended that camp, they send their daughters, they send their granddaughters, their cousins. Like, there's just a lot of family connection. And yes, it's ecumenical. It's Christian. I believe that the founders are Methodist, but I know lots of Catholic families who send their daughters there and have loved it.
Yeah, Jim, in terms of the sheer loss of life, what are some of the challenges that you've been reporting on and seeing in terms of recovery and just the rugged terrain and the nature of a flash flood like this?
Well, one of the first things I noticed when I was talking to people was how shook up the people I talked to were. I've actually reported on a number of different disasters, like the California fires recently and flooding in North Carolina, and I hadn't spoken to people that were as shook up as the people that I spoke to. And there's obviously a lot of relief that, you know, their children or people they know were not, you know, victims of the flash flooding, but also great concern and sadness for people who had lost loved ones. Also, what I was told was, as Amira mentioned, that these floods are something that have happened in the past. This one seems to be a particularly bad one that surprised people. It happened in the early morning hours, and there really was little warning of it happening, and it happened so quickly, and I think that's why you saw places like Camp Mystic so devastated. I spoke to some people at another camp, Camp La Junta, about 5 miles away on the same river, and that site was flooded and devastated as well, although everybody got out there. They went to high ground and were eventually picked up. So I'd say the fact that these things happened so quickly and it happened in the middle of the night, I think, contributed a lot of the damage that we saw.
Jim, your reporting included some insights from people at the Notre Dame Parish in Kerrville. What's going on there?
Well, Notre Dame has been a site of distribution of emergency supplies. There's also been a lot of spiritual activity. The bishop came and celebrated the Mass on July the 6th, a few days after the flood. He was actually there the day of the flooding, came that afternoon, and then came back 2 days later. He's been my conduit for most of the information I got in the parish. He was quite shook up. He said he was there largely just to be with people, to listen to their stories, to pray with them. He said they were often at a loss for words. He said he was at a loss for words. You can tell he's obviously a very compassionate man, was very concerned, and that the diocese there to provide what support, you know, can be had.
Yeah, Amira, let's talk about the bishops. In particular, Archbishop Gustavo Sierra of San Antonio, and the work that the church has been doing on a diocesan, archdiocesan, but also on a parish level, because I think this has been a pretty important moment for the church in that region to help in a moment like this.
Yes. Yeah, so on Sunday, the bishop said that, you know, they would be organizing aid. He spoke with the pastor of Notre Dame, spoke with the pastor of St. Peter's Church in Burney, which is where I grew up, about 30 miles away. And he let me know, the pastor there let me know that they would be organizing aid there as well. Yeah, I think all of the parishes around are coming together to help the community.
Yeah, I can give an example of one woman I talked to. Was with the Catholic Daughters of the parish, St. Mary's at Fredericksburg, which is maybe a half-hour drive away. They started by praying for the victims. They had a divine chapel of mercy, and that kind of segued into getting together crates of supplies to distribute. And they actually came over. They wanted to get together 4 crates of supplies. They got a whole truckload, and they came down with 14 volunteers, and they were distributing, you know, the things that have been mentioned, food, clothing, toiletries, that sort of thing. And what was interesting is they walked over to the river afterwards, which was moving quite fast still when they were there. And they're looking across the river, maybe 50 to 75 yards away, and they see something in the trees about 30 feet off the ground. And they look closer, and it was an RV up in a tree 30 feet off the ground. It kind of gives you an idea of the devastation.
Yeah, there's really two dioceses, right, Amira? So where you are, Galveston, Houston, and then the Archdiocese of San Antonio. San Antonio, I think it's important to mention, Matthew, is that You'll remember back in May of 2022, mm-hmm. This was the site of the Uvalde school shooting. 19 children and two teachers were shot and killed. You know, more than a dozen others were injured. And it wasn't long after that, maybe just a matter of weeks, that there was another tragedy where 53 migrants lost their lives in a tractor trailer. This area has seen a number of tragedies in recent years. But let me ask Jim and Amira, just as reporters, what about the difficulties of reporting this type of event, doing the type of interviews that you've both been doing?
Well, I had one comment to make regarding that. Usually in the past, when I speak to the people about the fires or other floods and so forth, people were quite eager to speak with me and share their stories. And it's very vivid things for the storms, a lot of storms that come through that region. This time, I didn't get that at all. People were not particularly eager to share their experiences. It was just a different vibe. It was just very sad. Which was different than what I've experienced in the past.
Yes, I've had a similar experience, and I have interviewed several people who are connected with Camp Mystic, and I know at least for that community, there has been in the mainstream media a lot of criticism of the camp leadership. You know, why didn't they have, you know, better evacuation plans in place? Why, you know, did they continue to build on a property they knew was in a floodplain? There's been a lot of criticism, and the community, the Camp Mystic community, is feeling extremely defensive about that because they love the leadership. They feel like, you know, several of them told me if they rebuild the camp, they will send their daughters back next year. But they were, it was very hard to get them to speak to me initially. I had to, you know, say, you know, look, I grew up there. I know exactly what the flash floods are like. I don't blame the leadership. And once I earned their trust, they were more open to speaking with me. But there has been, I think a lot of them have closed down because of that backlash. It's also become political. You know, there was a pediatrician in Houston who posted something about how, you know, MAGA supporters, you know, deserve what they get, something like that. She has been fired. I mean, there's been a lot of backlash, politically motivated, mean things said regarding the victims, totally inappropriate. And I think that explains part of their reluctance to speak.
Yeah, well, thank you both for your coverage on this. I know that this is an ongoing story that we're going to be keeping a very close eye on, especially given the impact it has had on the church there and the role that the church is playing in rescue relief and the care for the victims. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. When we come back, we talk with Solène Tadier about controversies in the life of the church in France, as well as a very powerful pilgrimage. Stay tuned to Register Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director for EWTN News and host of Register Radio, along with my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, this has been a busy summer for news in France, some of it controversial, but also some of it very spiritually rewarding, even edifying. Register Europe correspondent Solène Tadier has been covering all of these stories, and she joins us now. Solène, welcome back to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me again.
Well, the last time that we had you on, we were talking, as I recall, about a monastery reviving the world of wine in France. So it's what I mean by it's been a busy new summer in France, hasn't it?
Yes, indeed, as always in France, and especially these past months, you know, this revival of the faith, but also the revival comes along with also some scandals and more difficult moments. But yes, we are never bored when we follow the Catholic life in France these days.
Yeah, Solène, let's start by talking about this article that you've written, Catholic Schools in Spotlight as French Abuse Report Fuels State Oversight Debate. This has been big news in France, I know, for months and years, really. Can you tell me, just give our listeners a synopsis of what this report was about.
So this report was about many cases of abuse in schools for a long period of time, and in both private and public school. And the shortcomings of the state in overseeing what has been happening in these schools. So basically, it was supposed to cover all the educational system in France, but it happened to be the case that this report focused heavily on Catholic schools, on private Catholic schools, private Catholic institutions. So it was a few months investigation led by two parliamentarians, Violette Spilbou from President Macron's centrist party, Renaissance, and far-left party, La France Insoumise, Paul Vanier. So they have been addressing all very serious, they have been reporting very serious cases of abuse spanning several decades. It should always be precised. And it was triggered by a very famous case in France called the Betaram school. It's a famous Catholic school in southwestern France, where some voices spread a few months ago about some serious abuse that had been taking place in this school for years and years without anyone being reported. So this scandal that burst in March mostly gave rise to these in-depth investigation. Even the Prime Minister, François Bayrou, who actually sent some of his children there, was called to testify. So it became a national scandal, and it gave the government or these parliamentarians the impetus to investigate more in depth the phenomenon. What the report describes, it's a several hundred page report describing acts of unprecedented severity, absolute sadism, even sometimes sexual abuse, but most of the time a lot of severity. And it happened to be the case that Catholic schools are, according to the mostly targeted, some structural issue with Catholic schools, because they say, oh, the Catholic school tends to be articulated around more a stronger hierarchy. So they have these structures, and they have been targeting Catholic schools like very heavily, saying, oh, the state should completely oversee this Catholic school much more closer than before.
You know, on that point, you make note in your piece that the report comes out in the midst of efforts by the French government to extend greater control over education. You note, for example, in 2021, President Macron was proposing a ban on homeschooling. There like a pretext at use here to expand government control over schools, including Catholic schools?
It has raised this concern, of course, because we know for the past few years there has been this effort from the government, and they always say, oh, we are targeting Islamic radicalization, but eventually most of the schools that are being targeted by these measures, by these bills, are the Catholic schools, because they enjoy a certain freedom. And so most recently, an emblematic case of that is the Stanislas School. It's a very prestigious Catholic school in Paris that has been under investigation for alleged non-compliance with the national sex education curriculum. And they say, oh, there are some drifts, some homophobic, sexist drifts. And they have been criticizing the new Christian culture courses. They say, oh, it's not aligning with our laïcité, you know, like this strict separation between the state and religion. And so religion shouldn't be taught at school. So, of course, what this report contains, I think most of the testimonies seem, of course, legit, that they report very important cases of abuse, a different kind of abuse, but also in public schools. So the criticism from people coming from Catholic education, but also some ministers, some journalists, even a journalist with Le Figaro, Caroline Bayer, she's been reporting a lot on these issues, saying there is a bias against Catholic education in France because everything is framed in order to really target Catholicism in general, and always drawing the conclusion that their autonomy, their independence should be suppressed. And actually, one of the people behind Vanier, one of the co-author of the report, is well known for being extremely anti-Catholic. And last year, he already published a report to criticize the way Catholic schools were funded. So it's a very difficult topic because, on the one hand, you want to protect children and to make sure that there is a greater control over these schools, to make sure that there is no structural issue. At the same time, the critic says, oh, we need to be very careful because once our freedom of education is lost, it's almost impossible to recover it. You know, that's what it is at stake right now.
Yeah, there's a lot still to watch on that story. I know there's going to be a lot of fallout in different directions. Let's change to the good news, if we could. Selene, you've written a wonderful piece for the Register about a fascinating pilgrimage of fathers and husbands and aspiring fathers that takes place in Provence. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, there are lots of, the new museum that I mentioned last time, the wine museum, is actually in Provence. And so now this pilgrimage as well, like southern France it seems to be very dynamic when it comes to Catholicism and pilgrimages. You know, you have all these sites in southern France where great saints traveled. So it was in July, from July 4th to 6th, 3 full days. You had some 2,000 men converging together, walking together, whether they are already fathers or aspiring fathers, like you said, praying to become fathers, and they come together and they see it as an essential moment during the year to really be between men and address their issues, discuss their issues together, pray. Confession is a huge part of it. Like the organizers told me, many, many of these men are not really big, not all of them are really practicing. And for them, that's the opportunity to really go to confession, maybe for the first time in years, and go back to their Catholic roots and being listened to to other men who know their realities, but also to talk to priests and have a time of adoration. And I had this very touching testimony from the organizers who say, oh, I have men from every walks of life. I have an undocumented migrant in my group, in my chapter. I had a CEO of a multi-million fund, and I had prestigious lawyers and unemployed men, but we don't know who we are. You know, we just dressed in the same way, we just together united in faith, and that's something they so badly need right now, you know, especially nowadays in our society. There is this huge surge in depression and loneliness. So it's, many of them have different situations. Some are married, some desperately want to be married, and they are asking, they are praying to Saint Joseph and to Saint Mary to find their spouse and to have the grace of becoming father. So the testimonies are wonderful, and this pilgrimage has been especially fruitful. You know, it's in a special place. It's in Cotignac, of course. That's extremely important to precise that, because Cotignac is one of the only places in the world where Saint Joseph officially appeared, like an official apparition recognized by the Church.
Well, that's right, and it has various miracles attached to it, as you note, for example, the birth of King Louis XIV. So, I mean, this is a fascinating history. My favorite quote that you have in here is you quote one of the organizers, a chapter leader, where he says, "One of our priests always says that faith enters through feet." It's a reminder, as we have seen also with the pilgrimage at Chartres and elsewhere, that the pilgrimages really are making a huge comeback, aren't they?
Exactly, because we are all, you know, working from home, or everything is so digital, and we are so disconnected from each other. So for these men, it's a wonderful opportunity to really refocus on their faith. You know, like, you have to wake up so early, and it's incredibly hot. It's in southern France, and so it's extremely hot outside. They are exhausted, and what they told me is that many men actually cry. You know, they cry out of exhaustion, but also because they're relieved.
It is very much a transformative moment for them, and I love your reporting on this, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week here on Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much, as always, for joining us here on Register Radio, here on EWTN Radio. On behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please, until next week, please take care and God bless.